The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And that is the end of that. I feel like Stan and Ollie when they look at each other. And they nod their head.
Yeah. You know who did that also?
Who else?
The skipper.
Oh, yeah. Well, and no, more
stole,
like...
He stole it from Ollie.
I'm sure, but Stan and Ollie would do that thing where they would just look at each other and go, and nod their head, and nod their head, and they would just do that back and forth several times, so... Yeah.
Yeah. Ever watch that Stan and Ollie movie with
I did not. John C. Reilly? No, I did not. I heard a lot of good things about it, but I did not
If you get bored and you feel like some, you know, interesting melodrama, you should check it out. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, because it does portray their relationship in a very different light than what people normally think of or consider with those two. So,
yep. It's nice. And, you know, the actress who played Moaning Myrtle in the first Harry Potter is in it as Ollie's wife.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And she cried a lot. Of course. Yeah. When she was in the first Harry Potter playing a 16-year-old, she was in her 30s. So now she looks age appropriate to be married to a 50-year-old Oliver Hardy.
Oh, okay. No Ashley Victoria Robinson this week, which means we can afford to bring Rodrigo on. Hello, Rodrigo.
Yay.
Hey.
What's going on with you? Did you get all moved and stuff?
Yeah, finally.
How'd that go? You got any scary stories to share with us?
Oh, I got, how much time do we have?
Oh, we got like 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah. It was a very, eventful move.
Because number one, it happened so fast. You guys had to move very quickly.
Yeah. So, really the main issue is, back in June or July, they were like, okay, we're going to repave this whole neighborhood, right? But this is our old neighborhood, the one where we were currently living in. And, but that happened like during those days that were like the hottest days ever here in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, we'll do it in August. And we're like, okay, we're moving at the end of August. And August starts going by and we're like, they haven't told us when they're repaving this thing. And sure enough, it's happening right in the middle of our move.
Yeah. That's how it happens, right?
Right. So, I mean, if there was a thing that could have gone wrong with this move, it pretty much did. We had that going on. Then we, or my wife's car broke down.
Yeah.
And her car is an SUV. My car is the Yaris, right? So we were counting on one SUV and one bubble. to move everything. So we lost one. We got it back briefly. It actually eventually broke down again.
Oh, man.
And then we borrowed a truck from a friend and we broke her tailgate.
Oh, great.
It's an old truck. We broke it by accident trying to open it. I think it just got stuck. So even though we had the truck to move things, we had to lift everything like an additional, I don't know, 2 feet, however tall, like the truck's, sides are. So, we got a couple of things that set us back, to neutral there. They actually canceled the pave after the first day, which gave us a little bit more space, but, also we couldn't get the truck until the last handful of days. So we had to move everything else in first.
Yeah.
And then the furniture. So we are still unpacking because we had to like unpack and move stuff around to put up the dresser. And then we had to, move stuff around again to put up the bed. So it's just been super slow going, really, really kind of dragging. And then of course my wife's car isn't fixed yet.
Ugh.
So we still only have one car, which is why I couldn't make it this last time. And why I'm probably going to be, why I'm probably going to be sliding into home base with Critical Hit tomorrow. During this, my wife got sick from, and it was like respiratory stuff. So we're like, you know, it's the usual, like, is this COVID? We had to go get a test. It turned out that it wasn't. But yeah, it's like basically we've been technically moved in for about a week now, but we're still kind of like in that mode because stuff keeps happening.
Mm-hmm.
We had all kinds of problems with the internet because we got it. And then when we tried to install it, they were like, you waited too long. So we turned it back off.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Not to name any names, but
does it rhyme with blocks?
With what?
Blocks.
It rhymes with.
Does it rhyme with Flomflast?
Yeah. let's just say this is the company that we have is a cable company that was so bad that they had to change their name.
Oh, Schmarizen.
To try to confuse people. we are like barely now, like really starting to get our faces above the water, and we're constantly running into things because we're not unpacked, you know, where we're like, where are the like dog bags? Dog poop and stuff.
For a minute, I thought you were going to say, where are the dogs? Huh? There must be over there in that box.
It's not like it hasn't been part of it, right? It's like on top of that, we had to move some pets around.
Yeah.
The animals have had to figure out how to live in a house where basically we just have corridors around boxes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you'll be like, I'll be like carrying a box and be like, okay, I'm going to put this box over there. I'm going to unpack it. So I'm going down this box corridor and there's just a dog standing there.
Hi, and Rodrigo.
Are you going to back up or no? I'm backing up, I guess. I mean, I'm trying to communicate to you that this will kill you if it falls on you, but they don't understand.
Yeah.
So it's been an ongoing, complex move. So, next time, definitely we're hiring movers.
Yeah. I like those movers. My sister, whenever she moves, does that where they hire the movers that come in and pack up all your stuff for you.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like when I moved, from California or when I moved from Atlanta to California, the movers, we already had everything boxed up. So all they had to do was just bring the boxes into the house.
Yeah.
And then I was in charge of unboxing. But with my sister, it's like, oh no, we have somebody comes in and they pack up all this stuff for us and they bubble wrap everything and they do all this stuff and take care of it. And unless you tell them you want something specific, they just do it themselves. And then it shows up at your house and then you unpack it. And it's just like, wow. Okay, that sounds like an expense, but whatever.
Yeah. Yeah,
it does,
I mean, we're probably
like a
good
great
just
expense
with the,
if you can afford it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my sister can, so.
We'd probably just, because I think part of what bit us this time is that we were maybe a little cavalier about the move anyway, before 10,000 things went wrong.
Yeah. Probably going to the landlord and going, neener, 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 we're moving was probably not the karma you needed for this.
Oh, The landlord tried to sell us our place, and
oh, really?
I don't even want to tell you how much he was asking.
Let me guess. So you were in a condo, right? Or were you in a?
This is a townhome.
Oh, a townhome. Now, was it shared on the other side?
We have neighbors, but this is a corner townhome, so we have neighbors on one side.
$560,000.
Oh no, I was going to go more like 8 to 1 million.
Matthew's a little closer, but we don't have either of those sums.
Right. Right.
So yeah. We were not going to buy the old place also because,
it was haunted.
It had, hardwood floors and the landlord was very explicit about what was not to happen on those hardwood floors. And so we were always stressed out about whether the hardwood floors were okay, which is not no way to live. Like it was the kitchen, you know, it's like, you can't get the hardwood floors wet. The only hardwood floors are in the kitchen. And it's like, why would you do that? Yeah. Also not having dogs in the kitchen, like removes half the point of having dogs, which is that they clean up.
Yeah. They clean up the mess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, it sounds like fun times, Rodrigo.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know. My wife is trying to redo her office to kind of make it more of a lounge, not a lounge area for her, but just a place where she can just go in and just be away from everybody. Mm-hmm. And so she's been cleaning that up. And oh man, this weekend, she's just like, I shouldn't have even started this. This is a nightmare. There's like so much stuff I just want to throw away. And I'm like, yeah, do it. Throw it away. That's, you know, you know how I feel after the comic book room got flooded. And I had to, the easiest solution was to throw as much of the stuff away as possible. And if we had to move now, it would just be a nightmare and a half to try and move. Just because of just all the collected junk. Now, on the one hand, if we were going to stay here in town and just move from one house to another, we have a storage shed. So we can move a lot of stuff to a storage shed while we're waiting to move into a new house or while we're getting things situated in that house and then bring stuff from a storage shed to the home if we needed to. But if we had to move across the country, nightmare city, man.
Yeah, there was definitely a point there when we were like, with this paving, we are going to, it's like with the paving and when we wanted to get the new place, it's like there's going to be a gap between where we can move and before we get the new place. So we're going to have to find like a third place,
mm-hmm.
like a storage space and like put all our stuff there for like a day and a half before we can move stuff from. So it didn't come to that, but yeah, it's like I said, I don't feel like we're out of it yet because we're still dealing with the car stuff. My wife's still sick. We're just like still in that mode and it's an exhausting mode to be in.
I understand that completely.
I've been in this house for a little more than 2 years, and one of these days we're going to finish unpacking.
Yeah, and then it'll be time to move again.
Yeah.
No, we are never moving again. We're all too old and too fat and too tired, so we live here now.
Yeah, we packed up kind of haphazardly, so I feel that we have to, like, unlike last move, we have to finish unpacking because there are, like, things that we need that are probably under a pile of like old drawings and like expired, you know, cough medicine. And like, we don't know where it is, right? It's like, we don't have like all of our masks, which are necessary things now.
Right.
So it's like, okay, well, there's here somewhere. We have to like, let's open this shoebox and see what's in here.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Ugh. Anything been going on with you, Matthew? Do you have a interesting anything happen over the Labor Day's weekend for you?
I realized that if I had an auxiliary Sunday every weekend, I might actually get something done. We did some cleaning. We got some laundry done. We hung out, you know. I have been using the child to get the groceries. And, of course, they were off with friends on Saturday or Monday. Actually, no, they were working. And I had to go and get the groceries my damn self. And I'm like, hey, I can still go to the grocery store, so I'm not, like, that old. But, yeah, it was just, you know, boring old stuff. I did discover something very, very interesting, though.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I was like, ask, but what?
Oh, you should. Go ahead and ask.
What?
I was, like, on the internet, right?
Oh, mm-hmm. Good Lord.
And I was looking at stuff on the internet, right?
Oh, oh man, no. This is where we get into and our blue period.
I was, well, you know, we talk about My Hero Academia on the podcast every once in a while. And I was going back through PS238,
mm-hmm.
which is a 20-year-old comic now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I mean, certainly they didn't invent school superheroes. But going through PS238, I really want to know how much of the My Hero Academia people are aware of that book, because
man, that
there
would be
are some character beats that are just remarkable.
That would be really hard because PS238 was such a indie book with such a sporadic schedule.
Right. Well, they put out like 47 issues in 6 or 7 years, and then they went digital only.
Oh, digital only. So maybe. But
yeah,
then
for
again,
like the last 5 years, he's been doing it just as a web comic. And
yeah, I don't know. Maybe. But I don't know.
It's definitely interesting. It was one of those moments where I'm like, hey, you know, because even the main character
is vaguely called Midoriya because Midoriya is that kind of a weirdo loser kid.
Does PS238 have a splody hands and a jeans guy?
They don't have a jeans guy, but they do have a teacher
called Splody Hands.
Looks, no, not Splody Hands. He's not called Splody Hands.
Yeah, he is.
The names, you know, the names are different, but there are guys with Splody Hands. There's a girl with like nuclear powers.
Frog face.
She belongs to the nuclear family. There is a frog face. Yes.
Is there a sticky balls?
There's a kid who has an invulnerable clarinet.
Nice.
No, you can't get away with sticky balls in English. Captain Clarinet, his father is basically a Superman analog, and the clarinet is made of special, Argonian metal and can't be destroyed. So he flies around and he hits people, and he also has his clarinet, but he loves his music. So he doesn't use it as a weapon. He wants to play it. And that's why he's called Captain Clarinet. Yeah, it's adorable. I mean, it's not exactly the same archetypes because obviously Japan and the United States are different countries. Did you guys know Japan is like a whole other country?
I thought it was Texas that was a whole other country.
No, Texas is just a state with delusions of grandeur.
Oh, okay.
You know why? You know why they have such delusions of grandeur?
Because
everything's bigger in Texas.
I thought you were going to tell me because they used to be Mexico.
Oh.
And they remember back when they were awesome.
If that being a part of Mexico doesn't give you delusions of grandeur. If anything, it's like the opposite. Mexicans are very self-deprecating.
All right. Time for what are you watching, reading, playing, etc. I've got two recommendations that for things to watch that I think are low on the radar. One is brand new. It just came out last week. Only Murders in the Building with Steve Martin and Martin Short and Selena Gomez. All three of these characters live in a building. They all have, you know, their own little quirks and everything, but they kind of meet by accident when there's a murder in their building. They're all over at a coffee shop. And they all find out they all love the same serialized murder podcast. They like those crime serial things like that everybody loves. And so when they
find out, like serial.
And when they find out that there's a murder in their building, they decide to create their own podcast that is this reality crime series. And so some of the shenanigans that go around that as we discover who was this guy who was murdered and what was his life and how does maybe one or more of these characters, how are they connected with it? It's very well done. It is very much, the show is very much aware of how popular podcasts have become because of the true crime genre and just leans into it very, very much. And even goes into, you know, some of the problems that people run into when they're creating a podcast, what kind of a theme song should we have? And so Steve Martin is playing like a little ocarina, not an ocarina. What's the little squeeze box? And he's coming up
concertina.
With, yeah. Concertina. And you know, everybody hates that. And, Martin Short is this, former Broadway producer who's down on his luck. So he pre-sells advertising for the show before it's even released. And so they have to release an episode before it's even ready, just so that they can say it's been sponsored by, this deli. It's just really funny in that way. And then it's really smartly written and, acted too. Steve Martin and Selena Gomez's characters. There is so much chemistry between those two actors. It is just amazing when they're on the screen together, just how they play off one another, how they get into some big emotional moments, and just, it just feels natural for these two to be together. I mean, not together romantically, and who knows if that's where it will lead. I mean, obviously there's a huge age difference, but just in the way that their characters work together is really, really good. So I find it very funny. Only Murders in the Building, which I debuted last week, and I believe all the new episodes come out on Tuesdays. The other one, and so that's on Hulu. Also on Hulu is a show that I think everybody is passing by, and it's going to come as a real surprise when people suddenly discover this. It's already been renewed, I think, for a second and maybe a third season. Reservation Dogs on Hulu. This is from Taika Waititi, and I forget who the other person is, but this is all Native American cast. It takes place in Oklahoma on a reservation or in reservation areas where these four Native American kids, I don't know if they're all part of the same tribe or not, but they all have these aspirations to get the heck out of Oklahoma and go to California, because obviously everything's got to be better in California than it is in Oklahoma. And it's sad and it's funny and it's just, it is really, really good. The most recent episode, one of the main characters who's a girl, she goes hunting, deer hunting with her father. And one of the things that is kind of a key part of this series is that her brother died like within the last year of this show taking place. And so the four friends really miss him, and he had this goal of wanting to go to California. So they kind of all want to go to California because of this. It's really touching. And the best thing is, I think I've only seen like three white people in this entire show. It is like 99% Native American, and it is really, it's really good to see that on the show. And then the show just itself is so, so good. So if you guys haven't seen Reservation Dogs, highly recommend it.
I'd have to check it out.
Yeah. Have you seen it, Rodrigo?
I've seen advertisements for it.
Yeah. And now it's got a little language in it. Obviously it's got a little language in it. So that's kind of a big deal. Also, if drugs bother you, there's some drug usage in there just because it's free to smoke marijuana in Oklahoma, I think medicinal purposes. But it's just, it's really funny. And I find it just simply charming. Now, a show I would suggest people maybe avoid if they haven't started it yet, because you will be really disappointed, is a show called People of Earth, also on Hulu. People of Earth is about people who have had abduction experiences and their support group, and how a guy who is a reporter kind of who's been covering this group kind of discovers that he has had an abduction experience, and he's trying to figure out, you know, what all this means. Again, very funny show, very clever in how it plays upon all the alien abduction tropes and bringing in all the different types of aliens that people encounter in these stories. Really fascinating, ties everything together. You're looking for a mandroid. There's a mandroid in here, although it's a woman. The problem is the season two cliffhanger is a huge cliffhanger. Like, what the heck is going to happen next? And Hulu in its infinite wisdom has decided not to renew the show for a third season.
Oh,
so unless it's picked up by somewhere else and all the cast has gone on social media and said, oh, sorry, everybody, but we're not getting a third season. The show ends and you're just kind of like, and now what? It's just really, it's a horrible ending. And I don't think anyone saw it coming, because Hulu initially had said that they were going to renew it for a third season. And then a month or so ago said no. So if you're wanting to get into People of Earth because you think it's funny and you think it's got some really good actors in it, but you get too invested in the story, just be aware that you're going to be left dangling. So there you go. There's two really positive recommendations and one that is, it's good, but ... Matthew, what have you been watching, reading, or playing?
Well, the long holiday weekend gave me a chance to catch up with some of the Arrowverse. Almost all of season 6 of Legends of Tomorrow, which, go watch Legends of Tomorrow, you guys, seriously. It is it's the best of the Arrowverse. It is gloriously goofy and hilarious and fun. And it has the, you know, I haven't seen all of the finale yet, but it has the big giant, oh my God, everything is going wrong, what can we do, that we really loved about the first four seasons of The Flash. But it's all here with this really cool multi-person cast. And of course, you know, Tala Ash is on it and she's beautiful and perfect and you should watch everything she's in. And then, of course, season 2 of Stargirl has started. And Stargirl season 2 is actually better than Stargirl season 1. Even though the character of Stargirl is still the same annoying character who's like, I do terrible things, but because I'm the main character, everybody forgives me. there's some really fascinating stuff going on, and I'm not going to mention any names, called Green Lantern's daughter Jade, but there are some new characters in play that I'm like, oh, I'm kind of interested in Stargirl season two in the way I never was of season one.
Mm.
I will say this, as with anything ever touched by Geoff Johns, it has massive daddy issues. I mean, this is me talking, okay? When it comes, when I'm the person going, man, maybe your Freudian issues are a little bit noticeable. I'm just saying. But yeah. And in, that sort of whole vibe, when you're talking about, you got your CW shows, right? If you watch the shows like back to back, it feels almost like you get your crossover again. And we all miss our crossovers, right?
Do we?
No, maybe. Yeah,
I don't know. After the last one, I'm kind of like, pass. I'm glad they're done.
Yeah, but you're a cynic, you know? You're not like, really. Well, everything's downhill from here.
Oh, man. And I have made the proclamation that Ted Lasso is on the precipice of falling into third season. We've gone too far with the shenanigans and we can't pull back. Now, granted, it's only the second season, but I see some things being dropped down that make me go, uh-oh. They're starting to crank up some of the wackiness and they're starting to push those characters to their extreme limits. And that can only fare poorly for the show if it doesn't capture itself. So I continue to watch the show and I continue to love the show, but I have real fears now that the third season may be my last season. And I may not, if it goes the way I fear, I may not even make it to the end of the third season, but we still got a ways to go on that. But
there's
season two. Yeah, no, I mean, I've told you before, like the Goldbergs, it's like, oh, this started out just so perfectly. And then all of a sudden it's like, let's just crank up the stupid with every single character. And that show just got ruined. Same way with Fresh Off the Boat. So many of these shows all go to those wacky extremes. And then the show is just over. Although people just don't realize it's happening because each time they do a slow build. Like,
yeah,
if you were to watch
it a little bit.
Yeah, if you were to watch the second episode of Seinfeld and then compare it with the 170th episode of Seinfeld, and you just watch those back to back and you'd never seen any of the other shows, you'd go, what the heck happened? How did these characters get so ridiculously stupid? And it's like, well, it didn't happen overnight. It happened over the course of 10 years or whatever it was. So yeah, that's what I'm afraid is also happening with Ted Lasso, but we shall see. Rodrigo, what about you? Have you had time to read or watch or play or do anything fun?
Not a lot of time. And at any given point, I didn't have internet or whatever. So I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos on my phone. And through watching YouTube videos, I discovered that there's a Heathers musical, you know, the movie Heathers from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a musical. Somebody made a musical out of that. And the music's really catchy.
I'm going to blow up this school. Is that the big number?
It's pretty dark. Some, you know, I think the music gives the comedy aspects a lot more oomph. But I mean, I'm not watching the musical, so obviously there's stuff that happens between numbers. But
oh, so you just get like the highlights.
You know, it's got some bite to it, like you'd hope. But again, I'm just kind of every once in a while, like listening to a song or like. Somebody's made animatics of a lot of the songs.
Oh yeah,
so that's fun. But yeah, no ability to really like sit down and like watch TV or read something. Although we're getting back into Kim's Convenience now that things are settling down.
Yeah, see, that's another one that also suffers from that same problem.
I mean, it's a classic sitcom situation.
Yeah, it is.
Like. Eventually, the characters just slowly get goofier and goofier, and it's easier to write an idiot when you're writing a comedy than is to write like somebody smart and capable, and then you need to challenge them. Like my go-to is Scrubs, right? If you watch the first episode of Scrubs and anything past like I don't know season three definitely. It's like you're watching two different shows, right? Mm-hmm. It's like Zach Braff is like being like Urkel, or like Screech, right?
Yeah.
He's like
yeah.
putting his hands on his head and being like, oh, I don't know about that, you guys. And it's like, who is this person? You look at JD at the beginning of Scrubs and it's like, yeah, this is a young, somewhat insecure guy who's smart.
Right.
And he's got stuff going for him. You know, it's like, but all of that falls off because it's a lot easier to write a bunch of goofballs that are always being goofballs.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really kind of a sad example because when that goes down, everything just kind of goes out.
Well, and that's what I see with a lot of these
up some of it, but
that's what I see that happens with a lot of these kinds of shows where it's like, oh, it's so good. And then you pushed it too far. And I'm and there are some really good shows. Ted Lasso, really, really good show. I'm just hoping that they don't push it too far to where the stretchy doesn't, it's not able to stretch back into its original shape afterwards. So anyway, we probably ought to do a show. And I tell you what, I'm going to release this pre-show as part of the main Major Spoilers feed. So all of you who are listening to this now, if you are not a patron, this is just a sample of the kind of discussion that we do each and every week in the Major Spoilers podcast pre-show that you can only get when you are a patron over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Now you need to be a silver level and higher member, but maybe you can't afford the $5 a month. Maybe you only want to kick in a dollar or two. Know that it's going to keep shows like the Major Spoilers podcast alive and strong. But if you can't afford that $5 a month, $5 a month, you not only get access to this pre-show that we've been recording here, you get access to a bunch of other stuff. You can find out more at patreon.com/majorspoilers. And we can thank we got a new yearly patron this week. We got TBM Games is our new yearly patron. We've got Bella Orr, who's our new silver patron. And we also have Hunter, who also upped their pledge this past week. So welcome and thank you to all of those fine folk who continue to make the Major Spoilers podcast happen. And now, how about we do a show?
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast in pop culture, whatever it is, for pop culture and comic fans, and maybe other people as well. Just something for everybody. That's who it is. Liberty. This is for everybody. Even you, little Timmy. Even you. But not you, Ted Cruz.
Issue. Stop it. In this issue, for everybody but Ted Cruz, we journey back to my youth with a cartoon crossover to end all crossovers. Get ready for Fortress Tiberius. We got the goods on Shang-Chi, the coming attractions in TV and film, A Sinister War, A Book of Mazes of Heart, That Savaged Two Turntables, and a microphone. Bottles and cans, just clap your hands, dear friends, because the Major Spoilers podcast is spray painting the vegetables, and it's on the air.
Yeah, that's what they say. Hey, welcome to the Major Spoilers podcast, episode 942 episodes of the Major Spoilers podcast. Welcome. In the pre-show, I guess everybody's listening to the pre-show, but I did tell our patrons on the VIP live chat last week that when I did this, I would treat this portion of the show where I tease the pre-show just like we would normally tease the pre-show. So in the pre-show this week, we talked about some of our favorite television shows that we're currently watching and engaging with. We talked about Rodrigo's move, and you may have noticed there was a name missing. So because we're not hitting that funding goal, we had to let Ashley go this week so we could bring Rodrigo back into the show. And only have three people at the same time, apparently. You guys can fix that. I'm telling you, Matthew's going to be the next one that's going to have a skip week because of this. You can prevent that from happening by going over to patreon.com/majorspoilers and becoming a member today.
Save Matthew? He's rapidly running out of time.
Yes. Yes. We need a what's her name singing a song.
In the eyes of the angel,
save a Matthew or two. Won't you do it now? Let's do some news.
Okay. So, according to, I haven't seen it, but according to the trailers, it's pronounced like Shang-Chi, right?
Right.
Shang-Chi.
Mm-hmm.
Shang-Chi landed exclusively in theaters this past weekend and earned an estimated $90 million at the box office. According to Variety, the Labor Day holiday is typically a slow one, so this box office take seems to be a record breaker.
and looks to be the second largest opening of the pandemic, just behind Black Widow. As an exclusive theatrical release, Shang-Chi wasn't able to bring in additional monies from Disney Plus service, whereas Black Widow brought in an additional 60-ish million there. If you didn't see Shang-Chi in the theater, it will be available on digital platforms as early as October 22nd.
And I know what you're thinking. How can it be coming out that soon? And that's because during the pandemic, all the studios renegotiated with the theater owners, and instead of having the 90-day window, they all agreed to shrink that down to a 45-day window. So the earliest we get to see Shang-Chi is October 22nd or that week of that it will come out. Now, will it just go straight to Disney Plus, where Disney Plus will charge you an extra $30? Who knows? Will it be a rental fee on iTunes? Who knows? I was really hoping that Disney would say, you know what? We need some extra monies. Let's put this on the Digital Plus service, which they did not. The thing that I find a little maybe uncomfortable about this is that Monday morning, well, Tuesday morning, everyone's like, Shang-Chi, you know, blows away the box office and blows away all expectations with $90 million or however much money it made, $90 million. Yeah. Meanwhile, Black Widow is a huge disappointment. And it's like, it made more money than Shang-Chi did. So I think there's some weirdness going on there in that. How can one be a major record breaker and the other one that actually made more money is the disappointing loser of the group?
To quote the great philosopher Rodrigo Lopez, we're even more sexist than we are racist, and we're still hella racist, y'all.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, looking forward to that. Also, something else that you might be looking forward to, Sony in its attempt to get movies into the box office originally pushed Venom Let There Be Carnage from the September release to October 15th, but now they're walking back that release date to October 1st. Now, according to reports, this may be due in part to Disney's announcement that COVID didn't keep people away from the theaters this past weekend, and the studio really wants to make some money with this film. Keep in mind, Disney has Disney Plus and Hulu. There's Netflix. There's Amazon. There's Peacock for Universal. There is, who else do we have?
Paramount Plus.
HBO Max.
Yeah, we have HBO Max with Warner Brothers. Pretty much every single major studio has their own streaming service, except for Sony, which does not. So it's not like they can just say, yeah, we're going to go ahead and release this on October 1st or keep their original September date, because they don't have a streaming service that they could release this on easily. So they're kind of screwed either way on this. This is what Sony gets for dragging its feet on every single thing that's out there.
But you know,
they're also probably gun shy because of that horrible PlayStation Network thing.
Speaking of streaming services,
yeah,
HBO Max has ordered a pilot for Dead Boy Detectives, which was a Vertigo comic created by Neil Gaiman, about two boys who decide not to die, but instead hang around solving crimes. It's actually really, really distressing and disturbing, which, you know, it's a Neil Gaiman thing. But the Payne brothers, the characters from Dead Boy Detectives, are currently appearing in HBO Max's Doom Patrol. But it's not clear whether those actors are going to reprise the roles when they roll out into their own series. But they are expecting a pilot to start shooting in November.
If you're chartooting, please consult your doctor.
Yeah. Ask if Norelto is right for you. I'm kind of psyched about this. I enjoyed the book. It was Neil Gaiman and Mark Buckingham, who ended up a few years later on Fables.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You remember how Mark Buckingham would draw those beautiful, you know, everyone looked like a dead Victorian child. This book actually literally had dead Victorian children. So I'm kind of psyched. I don't know. HBO Max Titans slowly won me over, and I really do want to see more of Doom Patrol. I'm trying to talk my family into watching Doom Patrol.
Just turn it on. That's what I do. Is it, if there's a show that I want to watch,
I can't do that.
I just start turning it on and playing it, and then within a half hour, my wife is fully engrossed in the series to the point where, like I was talking in the pre-show about People of Earth, by the time we hit the end of season one, she was like, can we start the next season? I'm like, yes. And within a day and a half, we had blown through all of season two. And so it's real easy to get people addicted if you just turn it on and start watching it.
No, my kid will get up and walk away. I mean, the adult women in my house will literally just disappear into their bedrooms, and I won't even know
more
they're gone
you
for
time.
Like half an hour.
More you time. That's what I say.
Digital I'm trying to talk them into it because they love Brendan Fraser.
Brendan Fraser.
And the kid from White Collar.
Well, he's only the voice, so he doesn't really appear. So
they don't know that.
If they want Hunky McCunk Boat, they're going to have to go somewhere else. Perhaps they will go pick up their digital comics reader and read some digital comics. According to Comixology, the app that many of us use to read our digital comics is getting a bit of an update over the next couple of months. In an email sent to Major Spoilers last week, we can expect three major things. They had a whole bunch of things in their bulleted list, but here are the highlights. A revamp of the digital comic shopping experience on Amazon, where you will be able to browse, buy, and borrow books to read on either the Comixology or in Kindle app. I'm really kind of in a favor of that, to where if I have a comic book that Matthew wants to borrow and we both have Amazon or Comixology accounts, where we could easily just say, here, Matthew, borrow this comic. I think that's a real killer right there. Kindle Unlimited and Prime members will be able to borrow from a large library of graphic novels and manga and read on the Comixology app in selected countries. And then finally, Comixology purchases will be readable on Kindle apps and devices. So I think that those are the three big highlights. They've got some other streamlining things, some things with Android devices that they're doing. But those are some changes that you can expect in the coming months from Comixology. I really like that borrowing and sharing thing. Also, it sounds like, I know they have Comixology Unlimited, but that borrow, browse, and read item for Prime members and Kindle Unlimited kind of sounds like that too. So I don't know how that's going to go, but I'm looking forward to those changes. Listeners, we want you, go ahead, Matthew.
No, I was going to say that would be neat. I really like the idea of treating the media like you actually, you know, bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to, you know, give it to your friend and then he can go, hey, I'm going to buy my own copy.
Yeah.
That to me seems like that's going to drive sales.
Yeah. Honestly, I think right now the thing that is really driving Comixology more than anything is their unlimited service, very much like what DC Unlimited and Marvel Unlimited have, where you pay that $7.99 or whatever it is.
Like a monthly fee.
Yeah, it's a monthly fee, and then you get access to a selection of comics or a curation of comics. I kind of wish that they would, you know, just keep everything 6 months old, but then slowly, you know, keep adding to it, because you don't have access to everything. You only have access to certain things, and things come in and things go out, kind of like your streaming media services. So
things go in and things go out.
Yep. The worms go in, the worms go out.
No.
The worms go in and they crawl about.
That
listeners
song will get stuck in my head for days and I will never speak to you again.
The listeners, I'm join the conversation about these stories and more over in our Discord server. You can join the Major Spoilers Discord server for free, where you can interact in such channels as RPG games and what else? Vidya games and movies and television and general chatter and sports ball and all those things. Or if you have a Patreon account over at patreon.com/majorspoilers, you can link that Patreon account to the Discord server, and you can unlock even more channels where you can come in and join us in live shows like the GM Roundtable. You can come in and listen to us record the Dueling Review Show live Thursday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. I mean, seriously, what are you waiting for? Head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers, then connect to your Discord server and get welcomed with a ton of cat gifts coming your way. That's how it works. Rodrigo, we are going to jump into some reviews right now. What have you got to review this week?
Who, me?
Yes, you.
Oh, okay.
Couldn't be.
I've got Savage Hearts number 3 from Dark Horse.
Okay.
Savage Hearts is written. I don't know if you guys remember me reviewing a comic called like The Worst Guys or Worst Dudes.
Yeah, Matthew reviewed one this week on the Major Spoilers podcast. Yeah.
Yep.
Or on the website, sorry. Not
the website, yeah.
Yeah, so The Worst Dudes and Savage Hearts are both written by the same person, Aubrey Sitterson. Savage Hearts is kind of a savage adventure story, but it's got a lot of humor, and it centers around the relationship between two characters. Beefy lady and a weird guy with horns, and they're kind of trying to make a relationship work. And then also there is like an empire of bird people that are giving them problems. It's the art is really great. Jen Doherty does a great job, especially because all the birds you see are different. There's like, oh, here's a toucan and here's a macaw, and here's a, like a little cockatiel looking guy. But also, you know, the characters all have like very distinctive designs, so they're very expressive. You know, I'm jumping into number three. I hadn't read the first two, but this makes me interested to pick up the first two, and it makes me interested to read it from here on out. I'm going to give it 4 slices of meatloaf. It's really a strong showing.
All right. Very cool. That is coming out September 15th from Dark Horse Comics at Savage Hearts. Coming out this week from Dark Horse Comics. Looks like we got two in a row from Dark Horse. We have Maze Book number one from Jeff Lemire, written and illustrated by Jeff Lemire. So if you know Jeff Lemire's art style, you know what you're getting into right away. This one is kind of a dark and disturbing book. Here we are introduced to a building inspector who is kind of all alone in the world, and he just kind of goes through life because he lost his daughter, and he's grieving for the loss of his daughter. And in the middle of the night, he gets a phone call from her saying that, "Daddy, I'm trapped in the middle of a labyrinth." And so that's how that first issue ends. It's really good. It's really sad because somebody is dealing with the trauma of losing a child. It's got a weird kind of thread that runs through it, literally a thread, because every time he can remember his daughter, she's always wearing a red sweater, but that was an old ratty red sweater. And so there's this red line that kind of weaves through the panels and the pages to kind of connect everything, because it's her sweater coming undone. And it's been long enough since his daughter has died that he is starting to forget what her face looks like, even though he can remember everything else about her. But it's the phone call that kind of shakes him up and is probably going to start him on some kind of crazy journey to, I don't know, get his daughter back. I have no idea. Here's the thing. This is incredibly well written. This is incredibly arted up. It is overpriced, in my opinion. It is a $5.99 book. And as good as this book is, I don't know if it's $5.99 worth of material. So you're going to have to go into the book and figure that out yourself. I probably would have given it 5 stars, but the price had me second guessing and saying, I think that this is a deal breaker. So I'm lowering this to 4 out of 5 slices of meatloaf. It's good. It's expensive. So you really, when you come up to these kinds of things, and I think the price of your entertainment is going to continue to be a sticking point for many people out there. And I think as we get to this question of, is a book like May's book worth $5.99? If it's worth it to you, yes, go ahead and buy it. If this is the entertainment that you want and it's worth $5.99 to you, then by all means, go and buy it. It is a good story. It is good art. For me, it's $4.99. I would have felt a lot more comfortable with, but this price point for me is just going a little bit overboard. That being said, I didn't spend $5.99 on this book. This was a review copy that Dark Horse sent us. Still, very good story, very good art. I want to read more of it, but not at this price point. So that is May's book number one. That is out this week from Dark Horse Comics. We're kind of going in reverse release date order this time, where we did one 2 weeks from now, this week. And now let's go back last week, Matthew, to Marvel Comics and the Sinister War from Nick Spencer and Mark Bagley.
Yes, which has nothing to do with Mr. Sinister.
Oh, man. Why is it called the Sinister War then?
Because it's about the Sinister Six.
Oh.
Or rather, six Sinister Sixes. And the proliferation of sixes is intentional because a monstrous demon called Kindred.
I was going to say Mephisto is here, and this is how the X-Men get into the Marvel Universe.
Mephisto is in this issue, yes. But anyway, this creature named Kindred, who may or may not be Harry Osborn, has come back from HE Double Hockey Sticks and has possessed all of the Sinister Sixes, including assembling a new Sinister Six, to fight Spider-Man and just beat the living snot out of him. So, in this issue, that's fun to say, we get the silliest Sinister Six of all. It's basically six guys who individually fought Spider-Man at some point. So it's Whirlwind, the Living Laser, the Gray Gargoyle, Sin Eater, Juggernaut, and Morlun. And the first quarter of this issue is Spider-Man fighting these six villains. And if you remember his battles with Juggernaut and or Morlun, he barely survived either of them individually.
So the idea of a demon-possessed version of both of them teaming up with 34 other villains really bugs me, just on a level of, I don't know. There's a part of my nerd fanboy head that goes, no, Spider-Man right. should not be overcoming this. This is way, it's too much.
Too much conservation of ninjutsu.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we're dealing with teams that have Taskmaster, who's incredibly hard to beat on Spider-Man, Speed Demon, who's as fast as the Flash, two different Electros, two different Scorpions, two different Dr. Octopi. There are a ton of villains in play, and so far none of them have had any real focus other than being cannon fodder for Kindred, which is frustrating because these guys, you know, a lot of them are A-list villains. And most of this issue, he said, trying to speak English, involves Spider-Man just getting beat up. So if you really want to see Spider-Man get beaten and beaten and beaten, this is the comic for you. And it's only one of his villains getting involved in the battle and trying to help him that keeps Spider-Man from dying in this issue.
Is it Doc Ock?
It's not Doc Ock. Doc Ock does something in this issue that is very important, but no, it's actually Boomerang. If you know who Boomerang is, raise your hand.
I do.
So yeah, spoilers, Boomerang dies. And then Dr. Octopus, being, you know, a genius, figures out how to free himself and by extension the others from their demonic possession. But this is all exposition and fight. This is a $5 comic that is all exposition and fight. And there's a brief moment where Dr. Octopus and Spider-Man have a moment, and Ock is like, I didn't do this to save you. You suck. Go away. You suck. It's a nice moment, especially given the history that they have, you know, with the whole body stealing nonsense. And at the end of the issue, Doctor Strange and Mephisto are like, fine, Spider-Man has survived. He gets to keep his soul. He walked away from the fight, Liberty Blue, because bad things are coming. So this is issue 404. This is the end of the Sinister War crossover, presumably, but it's not. I mean, this is just a middle chapter, and it's a very, you know, convoluted. There's not a whole lot to this issue, especially for $4.99. Honestly, I'm giving it 2.5 slices of meatloaf, and many of those slices are for Mark Bagley's designs. Mark Bagley drawing the new Boomerang, the new Juggernaut, dealing with some of the members of the Spider crew that we don't usually get to see. That's pretty cool. I like the Shocker in this issue. But when you break it all down, I think I've been following this since the beginning, and I think I actually did a Spider-Man Sinister War either last week or the week before, and I was kind of disappointed by it. I'm still disappointed. I'm still trying to figure out what's going on with Sinister War. First of all, there's this central premise of, is Harry Osborn dead or not, that we've touched on twice, but now, you know, I've bought like 7-8 comic books and nothing. It's just Spider-Man getting the snot kicked out of him, which, if that's your jam, this is your book. It's not my jam. And it's a very abrupt ending. 2.5 slices of meatloaf. I'm pretty disappointed with Sinister War.
That's too bad. Because I know that, yeah. I think, as you said, I believe it does the ramifications of this tie right back into the, I think, the main Spider-Man yeah. series, but
you have to wrap back into the Spider-Man book.
Isn't Nick Spencer about to wrap up that run on that?
This may be his big magnum opus, and you know, part of it, part of the problem that I have with this issue is the way that it was presented as this is part 4 of 4 when it's actually part 7 of 11.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, that's too bad. Listeners, if you want to weigh in, of course, head over to our Discord server for more on that. Or if you were looking for more reviews on things like The Commanders in Crisis or The Worst Dudes #4, or even more, we've got a ton of reviews over Blue at MajorSpoilers.com.
Coming up in the next
few days. A couple of days. We've also got Inkblot #12 and Deadbox #1, which I can't remember if that came out last week or this week from who is that? Vault Comics. So you can find out all sorts of reviews over at MajorSpoilers.com. That's where you want to point your browser. Like I said, no Ashley this week. She's actually doing some stage rehearsal stuff. That's why she can't make it.
Have you noticed that she keeps disappearing on Star Trek weeks?
I am questioning her commitment to Sparkle Motion. I spent a whole year figuring out some perfect Star Trek crossover comics for her because she's a huge Star Trek fan. I think I should question her to see if she's a Trekker or a Trekkie.
She's from Canada. So she's a Trekois.
She's a Trekkie. But this week we are taking a look at Star Trek versus the Transformers from IDW Publishing. That's the whole monkey's paw of this deal. I do the Star Trek comics, but they're all crossovers. This one is very different than some of the previous crossovers where we saw, you know, DC Comics, Green Lantern crossing over with was it the Kirk Star Trek? I can't remember if that was Kirk or if that was no, that was the Chris Pine Captain Kirk.
Okay.
This one is very different because we get Star Trek the Animated Series meeting Transformers the Animated Series from the 80s. So we get a late 70s or early 70s Star Trek animated
74,
series.
I want to think 73, 74.
Yeah, and so this one
a filmation joint.
Yeah, and so what's interesting about that Star Trek is number one, the complete absence of Chekhov, because I guess he didn't want to come back and reprise his role in that show. And so he's not in this book at all. And then the second one is because it's all animated, they could introduce a bunch of other alien races. So we get a Chekhov substitute in the form of this squishy alien. And then we
Lieutenant get Lieutenant Eriks, who has three arms and a big rubbery head.
And then we get Miss Perfect, or whatever her name is, the cat lady.
Lieutenant Maress.
Yeah, Perfect is what she is.
She speaks like Eartha Kitt.
Yeah.
Cat people must perfectly speak like Eartha.
Yeah. And so they get called down onto a contested planet where there's some dilithium mining going on right next to the Klingon zone. And they find nothing but Transformers. I think as soon as McCoy beams down, he's like, I think I found a Transformer. And then shenanigans ensue for four or five issues, however long this series is.
I will not stand for this slandering of DeForest Kelly.
He goes and he says, I'm a doctor, not an auto mechanic, or something like that.
I do like that, yeah. DeForest Kelly does not talk like he's from Boston. He's not from South. He's from South Carolina.
I think I believe I found me a Transformer.
Son, I think that there's a Transformer.
Now, Matthew and I reviewed the very first issue of this series, so I'm very interested, Rodrigo, on what your initial reactions to this series is.
It dawned on me early on, really because of the lion person, that this was explicitly supposed to be like both of the animated versions of these.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a real kick out of it. Probably got a bigger kick out of that than I did out of the story. because yeah, it's like, obviously, the Star Trek animated series was meant to continue those adventures, but by virtue of just having an animation budget at all, they were able to do all these kind of like different things, right? It itself becomes its own thing.
Yeah.
So I like that this comic treats it as its own thing and tries to get the models, the characters, to that, to the way that they looked in the Star Trek animated series. It's cute. It's a good idea.
Yeah. I like that as well. I think that was the big kind of draw for me initially was, oh, this is all the animated series and they're doing the animated Autobots in the Transformers. So that's really cool. And then they go so far as to bring in, you know, a lot of those, was it season one Transformers or is a lot of the things with the folding battle station. Is that
Trypticon is a season two.
Season two, okay.
Trypticon, and Metroplex.
Yeah. So I thought that was really kind of clever, and I thought that was neat, and I figure if you're going to mash those two things up, that is a really great way to do it.
Yeah.
But
it's interesting that they also, you know, they brought in a couple of characters who aren't part of either of these continuities and just stuck them in there, like Windblade. And I think Black Arachnia.
Black Arachnia's in it, yeah.
Yeah, and she's like a Beast Wars era. Mm-hmm. Windblade is later on. But it's also one of those moments where you're like, oh, right.
they needed more female characters.
Right. Yeah. We get RC to show up, and then we need the same on the other side.
Got to have your RC. But for me, I enjoyed just reading this and hearing the voices.
Yes.
Because that's what my mind was doing. It was just like, okay, and there's Chris Latta, and there's Scatman Crothers, and there's Shatner doing his voiceover Shatner. And it's just, it's one of those moments where this book is aimed at me.
This book really should have everything you want, right, Matthew? It's got Triptychon turning into the Enterprise and transforming. It's got a giant Tyrannosaurus Rex running around, stomping on people. It's got Klingons, and it's got Federation. And it's got, you know, flying jets and cars. And then somehow all of the members of the Enterprise get turned into Transformers or something. I'm not really sure how that third act works.
They get like mech suits.
Yeah. Yeah. Somehow they all turn into giant mechs. And at that point, I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm out of here on this. This is so if we're looking for a story in here, there is not a story in here. Okay, literally it is. We show up to a planet. There's a lot of fighty-fighty. And for the next four issues, we're going to continue to fighty-fighty. And then we're going to leave. The end. Goodbye.
The hot pink Klingons and the Decepticons, something, dilithium crystals.
Oh, it follows along very much like what you would see in the poor writing of both the original Transformers animated series and that Star Trek animated series. Where it's just, it's not, it is super basic plot. And instead of trying to wrap it up in 30 minutes, this thing goes on for, you know, however many issues this is, five issues or six issues.
I will physically fight you because.
I mean, you can try. I'm over here though.
The writing on Star Trek, the animated series was excellent. Literally, they had Larry Niven write an episode of Star Trek, the animated series.
And the writing on Transformers definitely happened.
That's right. The people who wrote Transformers had typewriters. But
yeah, no, so see?
There are episodes of Transformers in those first two seasons that are really great. And I feel like this is one of those moments where, once again, and we've seen this before with especially IDW crossovers, the fun is not the journey, or rather the destination. It's the journey. The fun is seeing, you know, Spock piloting a Spock mecha, a Spocka, if you will.
I would take ELO or Styx at this point.
The moment where, you know, at the beginning, where you're standing here on planet Cygnus 7 and weird things are happening, and Spock is like, I believe that vehicle is called a truck.
A truck. Oh my God. See,
you know, and for me, Fortress Tiberius, Captain Kirk, driving a Metroplex transformed into a perfect duplicate of the Enterprise. That's why I'm here. That's what I'm here for. You know, a transforming Starship Enterprise is really, you know, and both of these cartoons were, well, one of them was made to sell toys, but both of these cartoons were basically designed to entertain young kids.
Mm-hmm.
They were for, you know, the 12 and 13 year olds, and they hit that sweet spot for me because I was 12 and 13. But I think that if you know, I don't feel that it's fair to write them off as these cartoons were stupid and this book is.
Oh, I didn't say they were stupid. I didn't say they were stupid. I said they had simple storylines, and that's what this one has. It has a very basic storyline where it's just like we meet, we fight, we leave. And
there is more to this than meets the eye.
Not really. Honestly, I don't think so. Here's the thing. This, unlike the other crossovers, which is really saying, let us bring our fandoms together. Let's get those Green Lantern core, the Green Lantern War, Rainbow Ring fans. Let's get them introduced into Star Trek, and let's get those Star Trek fans a little bit introduced into what's going over on at DC. Same way with the Marvel stuff. This one literally feels like the only reason this one was created was for the nostalgia factor and to bring in the nostalgia audience. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but bringing in the nostalgia fans seems to weigh more heavily than story, in my opinion.
I would agree with you, but I'm not sure if that's a bug so much as it's a feature.
It might be. I mean, it literally might be, and that's the point of doing crossovers, right? Is to
yeah
to bring that money in.
Yeah, you can't really dig new ground in a big crossover like this. You can't go deep into, you know, hidden McCoy backstory or, you know, things that might have happened 3 billion years ago on Iacon. So it really is kind of a let's put something in front of these characters and make them respond in a way that everybody goes, I recognize that response. Yeah. You know,
or you have to spend a lot of time in exposition, like the Legion Star mm-hmm, Trek one, mm-hmm, where mm-hmm. it's like, you guys remember that guy from Star Trek that died, that was my friend?
As you know, I had a friend who died. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's the crossovers are tough, and man, there is, and it's funny because it happens so often, but there is almost no property that is more difficult to cross over than the Transformers, right? Because all of the characters are 30 foot tall robots.
Yeah.
So it's like they're, you know, they're mega damaged beings. Like the scale at which their fights take place is outside of normal human scale. So Transformers and the Scooby Gang, you're going to have to do something about that. Transformers and Star Trek, you're going to have to do something about that. Transformers, Doctor Who, you're going to have to do something about that, right? Unless they're crossing over with some other thing that can turn gigantic. I don't know, like Transformers, that Godzilla show that had like Godzuki in it.
The most Maybe recent Godzilla Transformers, the most recent Transformers crossover that I'm aware of is Transformers Back to the Future, where the DeLorean transforms into a new Autobot called Gigawatt.
Gigawatt.
Yeah. And so they've got that going. But
and
you're
before
right.
Before that, they did Transformers Ghostbusters where.
Yeah, where Ecto-1 transformed.
Ecto-Con or something.
Yeah. But you are absolutely right on how do we deal with scale. And I guess that's why you have mega versions of the Star Trek crew.
Yeah. That you have to. You have to come up with some reason. Like, you could just have the Star Trek guys fight the Klingons and the Autobots fight the Decepticons, but that's not as fun. It kind of, defeats the purpose of the crossover, right?
Yeah,
they each just end up fighting their own villains.
Right.
I don't know that they're, like, honestly, I think the way to fix that would have been to just, instead of rigging something together where Kirk is the only one controlling the Enterprise, if he just piloted or rather if it took the entire crew of the Enterprise to pilot Tiberius Fortress or whatever mm-hmm. or Fortress mm-hmm. Tiberius mm-hmm. right yeah. And then you get to see Kirk giving an order, you get to see Spock second guessing him, you know, and like you get to see all this stuff happen, and it all results in him like punching Megatron in the face.
Yeah,
right.
Now here's the thing. Mike Johnson has been doing so much Star Trek stuff at IDW for years. He knows what he's doing with the Star Trek stuff. I think John Barber was also involved in some of the Transformers stuff before. So these guys know their properties. It's just trying to get those cogs to fit together in a way that is satisfying for me that just didn't work here. And part of it might be going back to, like you said, Rodrigo, the size issue, because my gosh, the scale of humans to Transformers fluctuated greatly from panel to panel at times.
Scale in Transformers is, to put it bluntly, F-bombed.
Right. Scale in Transformers, it's a problem for Transformers, like for entries of Transformers stuff that just deals with the core of that world. Scale is still a problem, not just from the fact that it varies from shot to shot sometimes, but the fact that they specifically interact with humans, right? They got like a little human sidekick mm-hmm. or sometimes multiple human sidekicks. And it's like they want to involve them too. And pretty much all they can do is just be like, okay, Bumblebee, you're my best friend. And then Bumblebee goes in and fights. You know, sometimes they give like Spike, like a little suit, right?
Yeah, his exosuit.
Yeah.
So I don't know. For me, this is something that I barely remember the animated Star Trek series, because I think I only saw one or two episodes of that thing because it came and went so fast when it originally came out. And so
we were four.
Right. And I may have even saw it on a rerun of some kind, because I remember I was living at my parents' current house now when
that
I saw it.
That would have been when it popped up on Nickelodeon.
Yeah, for like because they didn't have cable. But I do remember seeing like one or two episodes, and it just came on for like a hot second and then was gone until probably the 90s when it resurfaced, and that's how people would have been even more familiar with it then. So I had very little. I had a passing knowledge of what was going on in Star Trek in the animated series. Transformers, really. I mean, I would watch the show with my friend Mike. He was more into GoBots. So we would watch that Transformers show after school. And I would just had a kind of passing interest in that because it was like I was hanging out with my friend. I don't care what's on the TV, but he was really into that stuff. So, I'm familiar, not super familiar, with both of these properties, and I like how they meshed, but my goodness, this is a book that just really fell flat for me. And maybe it's because, as you said, you can't really do anything deep with this.
Yeah.
Just because of the way the properties are set up.
And, a lot of times, and we have said this, I believe we said this when we reviewed this book on Dueling Review, a lot of times how these sort of stories work for you depends on whether you have an emotional connection to the material.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I said this was really aimed at nostalgia fans.
Both cartoons are part of, my childhood in ways that I found all of this pleasant. I thought it was really neat. I'm like, yeah, ooh, animated Spock. And by the way, Walter Koenig was not on the show because they couldn't afford him.
Oh, that's what it was.
Okay. Yeah, they did give him a writing. He wrote an episode of the animated series because they couldn't afford to pay him for the show. But nonetheless, I feel like if you are a huge Star Trek nerd or a huge Transformers nerd, obviously this is a book for you. If you're one of the rare weirdos like me who's kind of a mid-range nerd for both, this is probably a book for you. I don't feel like there's a lot of joy to be found for anybody outside of those particular groups, unless you're a big crossover nut, if you want to see that,
Yeah. I'm just trying to think, in all the crossovers that we've had, if there's really been one that has been super satisfying. And I'm not really sure. I mean, the Legion one maybe is the one that comes closest, but I think pretty much they're just there to serve that purpose of, hey, Venn diagram fan circle one, meet Venn diagram circle two, and let's see where we can find some common ground where you cross over. And that is Star Trek meets XYZ. So, I don't want to, if I sound like I'm being super negative on this, I don't intend to be super negative on this. But this is something that really has a very slim crossing over of the two circles of those two groups, in my opinion. Yes, there may be super fans of both of those, and there may be hundreds of thousands of fans of both of those, which will cross over into a giant transforming fan group that will storm the castles. But I really think that this is, you're looking at an older audience, number one, and you're looking at a shrinking audience, number two. So this is a very small target group. That being said, I think it hits everything that target group wants. And so, as Matthew was saying, this sounds like a must buy on that side, but I don't think it has enough story power for me to sustain the length that it is. If it was one or two issues, yeah, no problem. But 5 issues. I got really long towards the end when Starscream was suddenly like, I will fly off to Kronos and I will take over there in one panel. And it's just like, oh, come on, give me a break. So
it's Starscream.
I know, but he just comes in. He goes, I will kill your leader. Pow. Now I am the king. And all the Klingons are like, okay, I guess this guy's our king now.
Instead of
screaming kapla and punching stuff and raging against the machine. We got that. So I don't know. And Matthew, Rodrigo, what are your thoughts on this?
I think there are a lot of cool things that you could have done with a Star Trek Transformers crossover, but another issue with a Star Trek Transformers crossover is that you have to hit certain things, right? It's like this could have been a story about Kirk traveling back through time to 1983 and then riding around on Bumblebee solving mysteries, right? Like, that would actually be kind of awesome. But that's not what people are showing up to read, right? As cool as that would be, that's not what people are here for. People, you know, there's certain beats you have to hit. Like the old Klingons have to be there, the Decepticons have to be there. You take the most iconic vehicle of the franchise and turn it into a Transformer. That all has to happen. So in a lot of ways, I think the writing kind of has its hands tied because you kind of have to hit all of these things. And this one, at least, it wasn't like terribly boring, as it tended to be pretty action oriented. Mm-hmm. Right?
Oh yeah.
I feel like some of these have been like very talky.
Mm-hmm.
And even though Star Trek is very talky, and that feels correct, it's tough to do that when you're reading, right? It's like if you're hearing Patrick Stewart's voice, then you're like, ah, yes, I could listen to this all day. But when you're having to read like walls and walls of text over, like next to like painted versions of Patrick Stewart and
Guinan,
which doctor was it?
The 11th.
Yeah, and the 11th doctor, right?
Oh, that one, yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, well, this is more boring when it's in like my own head.
Yeah. We were talking about Transformers crossovers. I forgot it wasn't Back to the Future. It was Transformers My Little Pony was the most recent crossover. So I have no idea. I didn't read that series from IDW, so I have no idea what Little Pony got transformed into a robot.
See, interestingly,
probably Twilight Sparkle.
Probably.
I think that actually the contemporaries of Transformers would make for better crossovers, right? My Little Pony, the Care Bears, Rainbow Bright. I think Rainbow Bright Transformers would be a great crossover.
Well, we've in the movie universe, G.I. Joe and Transformers occupy the same space.
Yeah.
And I think in the cartoons, they would also occupy the same space and work very well together.
Yeah. G.I. Joe and Transformers, I think, I haven't read too much of it, but I know that it like really became its own thing to the point where it had like very impact, like serious impact on both, on both comics.
Yeah.
It's like characters have died here. It's like, when did this character die? It's like, oh, back when we were fighting giant robots. It's like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what, I mean, Care Bears would seem very, I mean, if you can do My Little Pony, I guess Care Bears would work. What about like Power? I mean, if we want to move outside of what IDW, what about Powerpuff Girls meets Transformers?
Powerpuff Girls would be good because the Powerpuff Girls are used to fighting giant things, right?
Yeah,
so true. That would work.
They canonically have a giant robot friend, Powerpuff Princess.
What about Transformers in Gravity Falls?
No.
That one would be very tough.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you could probably do like Transformers Adventure Time.
Yeah. Because, you could definitely do Transformers Steven Universe.
Yeah, definitely.
Because half of those characters are already Transformers.
You know, you really, there's...
We're literally giving you all the ideas you need, IDW.
Yeah, there's nothing in the rules saying that you can't have Transformers Uncle Grandpa.
Yeah.
But I would not want to see it.
Transformers Rick and Morty. There you go. Oni Press and IDW. In fact, they did giant Sentai robots.
You could pull that off, but I feel like Rick and Morty really suffers when it deals with the real.
I'm sorry,
like
what?
Rick and Morty.
Transformers real?
Well, he means like when they're
the
not
actual property.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I see what you're
the
saying.
The Rick and
Morty
episode about the Guardians of the Galaxy or the episode about Captain Planet was great. But had it actually been Captain Planet, it would not have been as great because, first of all, Morty falling in love with Alison Brie, I can see, but
yeah,
not necessarily.
Yeah, no Captain way they could Planet. Afford Tom Cruise for that, so.
I don't know what that means.
Tom Cruise is Captain Planet.
Transformers Top Gun.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. That makes perfect sense. Because then you could have Starscream sneak in, and then you have to have Maverick go and pew, pew, pew fight him in the sky.
Yep.
See?
Yep.
And then everybody screams Goose, and then Goose transforms into a parachute.
Goose transforms into a little robot goose.
The final Star Trek crossover that we have planned for this year, and we'll see if we can get Ashley to show up for this one, happens in December. Star Trek meets Planet of the Apes.
Right.
I'm not, I mean, pick another, just for funsies, pick another Star Trek meets property. We've already done Transformers. Do Star Trek.
One that is silly.
One that is feasible enough that IDW would probably plunk the money down for the IP.
Star Trek, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
I wonder if they would ever do a Star Trek Hellboy. That would be a little, Matthew and I were talking in Legion Clubhouse this week, how mixing sci-fi and religion together doesn't really work. So I wonder how a Star Trek Hellboy would work.
I don't think it would.
Probably not.
I feel like it would violate a little too much.
Hellboy is constantly trying to send Spock back to his hell dimension.
Star Trek Universal Monsters.
Yeah.
And then you turn kind of like that, the Star Trek's 5-man band, each of them into a different monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be interesting. You could have like Spock be Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And McCoy could be the mummy.
Kirk would be Dracula.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scotty would be, I don't know.
Invisible Man.
Wolfman.
Wolfman. No. You got to have George Takei as the Wolfman.
Oh, okay.
Because he's got that beautiful voice, and you could hear him go, ow, my.
So what's everybody's bottom line on this? Mine is, if you're a fan of both of these properties, buy it, but otherwise skip it. But what is yours, Matthew? What is your final bottom line?
I'm going to be honest with you. If you're a weirdo like me, this is a rush right out in a buying frenzy comic. But there aren't a lot of those weirdos in the world, and I get that. So I would say it's definitely worth checking out at the very least. Even if you think, hey, will this be any good? And, you know, if you're like Steven and you just hate Transformers and you don't know why, maybe not. But I would say for, most
too many
people,
too many steps to get the wheel out of the wheel well and turn into a shoulder pad. That's the reason why everybody hates Transformers.
You're still mad. You're still mad about the transforming robots from 1984.
Yeah, and then when you try to put them back together, the you could never get them back into the same shape again. GoBots were much, much simpler. It's like three pieces that flip around.
Yeah, you just fold them over and like flip one thing. Yeah.
The GoBots also have a hero called Screwhead, which, ties into your love of
Hellboy. Yeah, Bruce, Mike Mignola. Bruce movies, yeah.
Party drinks.
Rodrigo, final thoughts from you.
I got pretty far into this book just having patted myself on the shoulder about realizing that it was like both the animated versions. I got to like issue 3 where I was like, ha, 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 this book is great because it makes me feel good about myself. But eventually that kind of got a little flat. So for me, it would be like, if you enjoy that kind of like first gen Transformers and you've watched and enjoyed the Star Trek animated series, by all means. But if you haven't done either of that, this is a pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Star Trek versus the Transformers. Ashley, you're welcome. Next week on the Major Spoilers podcast, oh man, we are going to look at a comic that's going to alienate everybody because we're going to look at Roy of the Rovers, which is a football comic. And when I say football comic, I really mean soccer for you American listeners. And it is Roy of the Rovers, which came out in like the 1950s. And I think this kind of coincides with an anniversary. I was trying to tie it into some anniversary.
It was the 50th anniversary or something.
Yeah, 50th anniversary or something. But we're going to look at his stories from the 1970s next week on the Major Spoilers podcast. So that's where we're going to wrap it up this week. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Thank you for being part of the Major Spoilers experience.
We love your feedback, so join the rest of the cool kids at the Major Spoilers Discord server. Link is in the show notes to share your thoughts and reactions to this episode. Oh, Ashley's here.
Hello, I'm Ashley. Drop us an email at thepodcast@majorspoilers.com, and you might hear your words on an upcoming episode. Huh?
Oh, thanks for coming, Ashley. Don't forget, you can support the show and everything we do by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
And certainly if you love the pre-show talk, you can get more of that when you become that patron at the silver level and higher. And that's where we're going to wrap it this week. Thank you so much. We will be back next time because we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Fat the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic bookstore guy knew, he kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Stark Raven, it's like a man of iron. I might not be surprised to find that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being the middle place with a gang sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.